Hi, Jim Nolan here, and as I'm recording this, it's just a little over 24 hours since we had what's called an active shooter situation in downtown Cincinnati. And since the majority of the people that listen to this show probably live and work in the greater Cincinnati area, I just wanted to say that I know a lot of us are feeling unsettled, upset, distressed, anxious about what happened. So hopefully, by listening to my conversation with some really cool people and some really great music, maybe that will help heal a little bit and make us feel a little bit better for a short time, and hopefully get back to some kind of normal. In the meantime, please take care of yourselves. I love you, and I hope to see you soon. Thanks. Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Thanks for listening. Lung has just returned from an extensive tour, and I was fortunate enough to get some time with them just before the release of their new album, All the King's Horses. Kate Wakefield and Daisy Kaplan joined me to play two songs, one of which is not yet released, and they also spoke with me about the formation of the band, their work with producer John Hoffman, their new videos, their collaboration with Sofa Burn Records, and their time on the road. Just don't ask them about the Boston argument. Kate, Daisy, I'm so glad you guys are here. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us. This is great.
Kate, I'm familiar with your music. I think it was Water Lungs back in 2015 was the first time I heard any of your music. And I was just like, wow, this is amazing. But I'm curious about how, I guess, where you came from musically, and then Daisy, where you came from musically, and how the two of you met and decided to create this band.
I think I just started writing music for cello and voice in like 2013 or something. I had a vocal disorder and picked up my cello because I couldn't really sing or do much with that because I did opera before. And then like while I was dealing with all of that, I just wrote a bunch of music, and that was kind of a way of dealing with it for me.
I'd never played drums till like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So I started doing that. Before that, I had used some other instruments.
And then how did the two of you meet each other and decide, hey, we want to make a band?
We met through people in the neighborhood in Northside. I think Kate's boyfriend at the time worked with my wife, Rochelle. And then you ended up playing at the Listing Loon, right? And that was your first show. And that's where I bartended. And I was just like, wow, this is awesome. Like, even the first show, I was like, that's great. Like, this is like the greatest thing I've ever seen. You know how like when people start, it seems kind of like embryonic, sort of like it's growing. It didn't seem like that. It was just like, oh, this is the whole deal. It's awesome. So I was a big fan of Kate's solo, so I still am. And I don't know, eventually at some point that band that was being discussed earlier turned into Babe Rage, which was JJ from the Slippery Lips and Rochelle, my wife, and Kate played with us sometimes. Like, it was like this loud metal band. And then that band broke up, and then we started playing together.
Did you feel like including Daisy on the drums really led to a whole nother avenue of exploration for you?
Definitely. Until we jammed. I mean, I started writing like some heavier material, and that was why I asked Daisy if he wanted to like maybe just play and see what happened. But then once we got in a room, I mean, I'd only like written two songs, and then all of a sudden with the way he plays and with the just like our musical collaboration, like we just wrote a ton of songs.
Yeah, it kind of
really
became
quick.
Its own animal pretty quickly.
What I think is surprising to me is that musically and equipment wise, you know, Daisy, your drum kit's pretty simple. It's like just a three-piece kit, but then you have your setup, which is the cello, which you amplify, and then tell me about all the pedals and everything that you use to create your sound.
For this setup, I just use a electric cello going into just some distortion. The electric cello is that, and then, Big Muff, and then a polyoctave generator. Yeah, that cello, it's funny, because the band actually would have been a little bit screwed if we hadn't. One day I was walking home after we'd practiced pretty early on, and the acoustic cello was feeding back. And I was complaining to, like, Ben Sloan, because he was one of my neighbors. And he's like, well, I have an electric cello in the basement. You want to try it?
And then your first album that you put together, Bottom of the Barrel, tell me about that exploration and how that felt to make that album together.
Well, we recorded it 2 months into being a band. Yeah, we were just going to record a demo with John and Jerry from Vacation, and then we ended up just hanging out with John longer and just recording more and just ended up recording everything we had. It was kind of an accident.
We wrote those songs over that winter, and it was just really fun exploring, like, because until then I hadn't played really loudly. Like, my other project is not that loud. And so it was really fun just, like, jamming with this loud drum set and the way Daisy plays, and then just experimenting. There was no pressure with it, you know? It was just, like, our first record. No one knew us or cared or anything. It was just a really fun experiment in, like, really raw, loud sound for me.
I don't play cello. I don't really know much about the technique behind it, but do you approach the cello totally differently when you're playing lung music as opposed to playing Kate Wakefield music?
Kind of, yeah, but they both influence each other. I think the big difference is that I don't use a loop pedal with lung at all. So what I'm playing is what is happening. That definitely was a challenge to my technique when I first started, because I'm not a classically trained cellist or anything. And so learning how to play all those chords, like, in tune, versus if you have a loop pedal, you can play each note individually and then build the chords. That was a process. And as we keep working and as we keep writing together, it's fun to be able to create more and more chords and just see how far I can push the instrument.
Was that a conscious decision to leave out the loop pedals?
Yeah.
Like, did you want it more raw, more instantaneous, or what was the reason there?
I think it's just, like, our music just worked better without it. And every time we've tried to incorporate it, it just doesn't, I don't want to say it sounds sterile, but it just sounds like not like what we sound like.
Do you remember the first show you played together as lung?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's actually pretty good.
We played with Dog Yop at Motor, and that was a funny first show because
everybody was there.
Everyone we knew was there, and yeah. I didn't necessarily want them all to be there because it was our first show, you know? But that was fun.
Yeah,
I love
really
Dog Yop. They're good people. Great music. That was crazy, though, because there was, like, a totally new setup and playing. It definitely took a second to figure out how to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got better.
We kind of sucked a lot that night.
Did you walk away from that show feeling better about who you are as a band?
I think I just walked away being like, sweet, we did a show. Let's do another one.
Okay. You know? Like, you got that out.
It's like,
out of the way.
First one's done. It's all uphill from here. Well, uphill, I don't know. Whatever. It's like just right. A hill, just a regular yeah. hill.
So now your second album, All the King's Horses, again, recorded with John Hoffman.
But at Ultra Suede.
This time at Ultra Suede. What was similar and what was different?
I think this one we took our time more. We recorded it in between being on the road. So that was interesting, too, because we'd be on the road for like a month, then we'd come back for a couple days, record with John, then leave, and then do it again. And we just kind of took our time more with it. I was more picky with certain things, because I just wanted it to be an album that I actually liked. You know, I love other people's music, and I love flaws in other people's stuff, but I wanted it to be like, or not flaws, but I'm a perfectionist, and I just wanted it to be, you know, something that I, like, didn't hate. And so we took a lot of time just making it.
Yeah, just working on tuning and, like, which vocal takes were, like, the right ones. I mean, like, there's a way that people sometimes default in recording where they're like, live take's the best take, like, whatever, just do it. And it's like, well, no, because there's a difference between, like, playing live and playing in a studio and, like, making a good studio recording versus being a good live band. Like, those are two different skill sets, and you kind of have to, like, prime a song in different ways for each. There's a different procedure for both, and I don't feel like people always keep that in mind.
Did you have any tracks that you recorded, went on the road, came back, and then said, you know what, we learned something on the road, and we really want to try this
yep.
instead?
Yeah, we have a lot of those, and we also have like 8 or so songs that aren't on there that
maybe
we'll release as a hilarious compilation.
Well, Spiders we wrote the night before we went into the studio, and we were supposed to be practicing the other songs. And we recorded it, and it was fine, but we definitely, like, went out and played it for a while and then came back, and we're like, we should do this again. And we did it again.
Tell me the reason why you worked with John again on this album.
I love working with John. We worked with him on the first record, and then John did a solo record of mine as well. And he's just so fun to work with because he, like, gives advice without being overbearing. Like, he has a really good ear and really a creative mind, but he's also just a really kind, chill person. And he's really fun to work with because, like, you just don't feel nervous singing or making weird sounds. Like, a lot of our record, like, I make some weird sounds, and if I don't feel comfortable with the engineer, and if I don't, like, trust that they hear what I hear and they hear what Daisy hears, then, like, that's just not going to work. But with John, like, I always know that he's, like, an open-minded person who's a hard worker who, like, is just really good at what he does.
He's good at hearing no, and that is a rare talent in people. Like, if he's like, hey, what if we do this and do this backwards, and just something that doesn't make sense. You're like, dude, no. And he's like, okay, it's fine. Like, that's rare.
Sounds like he doesn't have a huge ego.
He doesn't, and that's really cool. But he's really good at working super hard for your vision rather than, like, his vision. And I feel like that's really rare, and that's why I like John Hoffman.
Let's take a listen to one of the songs from the new album. Which one do you want to play first? Do you want to play Gun?
Sure.
Mother always said to bring breathe, you're doing it wrong.
So you just came back from a monstrous tour.
Yes.
It was huge because we were driving all the way out to the West, and it's more economical to just play everywhere while you're there. People like drive out there and they'll do like 10-hour drives every day and do like Denver and Salt Lake and Las Vegas, and then they're on the West Coast. There's a bunch of stuff in there. There's tons of cities. Like people, I mean, even if it's not like, you know, hundreds of people at your show, like there's people who like music and it's not that hard to play. So it's like, I don't know, like we just applied the same principles we do in this part of the country to the West Coast. And it took a long time to book and figure out like where the weird spots, like the Richmond, Indiana's of the West Coast are like the cool little towns, you know, that people come out, but like they exist and we did it and we had a lot of fun.
But didn't you play like 9 days in South Dakota alone?
Well, we played a total of 7 days in the Dakotas, period, which was 3 North Dakota and 4 South Dakota.
How did you find all these towns that you wanted to play?
Weirdly enough, we only had a couple at first, like 4 total. One was a festival. And basically at each of the 2 South Dakota shows, the person setting up was like, hey, my buddy and Pierre wants there to be shows. They're like, if they set you up a show, will you play? And we're like, yeah, let's do it. And same thing in Sioux Falls. Like they were like, oh, there's this cool college town Vermilion, which is like down the road, and they want to have shows at their pizza place. It was almost like once they were like, knew that we would come, they're like, well, would you like to do some more? Because there's people who want to hear music.
Did exhaustion ever come into the equation?
Yeah, but it was really fun exhaustion. I don't know. I kind of like, the first month was awesome. Second month was really great. But like, I think it all worked because we took like a day off every 7 or so days. But then the last stretch that we did was like 15 days in a row or something. And then the very last day of the tour, we had 2 shows in Minneapolis that were like 4 hours apart. That like kicked my butt. That was really fun. But we were tired. We were really tired afterwards.
Let's definitely be clear here, because I feel like a lot of the time people have this idea of touring, and touring musicians back it up where they're like, oh, it's so much fun. Oh, it's so awesome. It's like, no, we drove and we did all sorts of, I mean, like, did you see the forest fires in California?
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. Just for reference, that was following us the whole trip. Like we played in Chico and we had to like cross through whatever, I can't remember the mountain range that is, but we get up on it and we're like, what is that? Is that a tornado? We see a tornado of flame. Wow. In the path we have to go, and it's a super long story, but like a drive that should have taken 4 hours because of fire ended up taking like 10 or 11 hours on like a dirt road through whatever mountain range that is.
In the van, yeah.
Yeah.
With like semi-trucks passing the other way, like on a dirt road. Like it was insane. And like that was not the only crazy thing, but that's suffice to say, like there's constantly like
things going wrong. Or
yeah, just something crazy, and like it is exhausting, but it's also awesome.
Well, it's all these little things. Like, I think earlier you had made reference, like, you finish a show and you might not know where you're going to sleep that night, so you end up sleeping in the van.
Oh, right. Yeah. All the time.
Just to give some perspective to anyone who's listening to this right now, you came back at the end of August. When did you leave? When did the tour start?
Like, June, late June or
something. We played a bunch in June. We had a couple days back, and then we left for a long time, I think on, like, 9:30.
Yeah, but I mean, like, we were, like, in and out of town. Like, I think we, like, came back for, like, 2 days and left. So, for all intents and purposes, it started on, like, June the 22nd or something like that.
That's still pretty grueling.
It was long, but you work hard, you play lots of shows, and then you also get to see, like, the Grand Canyon and see beautiful parts of the country and meet a lot of wonderful people and hear a lot of amazing music.
You get to play in a cave and stuff like that.
Yeah, we played in a cave.
It was a cave?
Yeah. Well, right above a cave, but... But then we got to go down into the cave because the band after us was an acoustic act. And, oh gosh, like crystals all over the walls and just the acoustics are amazing in caves.
Where was this?
South Dakota, near Rapid City.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
How'd you get along, the two of you?
Really pretty well.
Honestly.
We work well because we get mad in the same way. Hmm. And we get tired in slightly similar ways. And we've toured enough to like, we give each other space. What?
I'm thinking about the Boston argument.
That was the capital letters, the Boston argument.
Well, no, it wasn't about, it was about the band Boston. This is an example, when we argue, we'll argue about the
stupid
most ridiculous
stuff. Like,
okay.
About whether kale or pizza is healthier to eat.
And like, we'll get in, kale, clearly, like, we'll communicate very clearly about everything that needs to happen, and then we'll get in, like, a vicious argument about whether kale, if you had to survive just on kale or just on pizza.
But it'll actually get intense. Like, we'll actually get, like, We'll be so tired at that point that, like, yeah, the pizza kale argument will never go away. That's like, that's. And then also, I don't even want to get into the one about that riff that you think sounds like Nirvana or something.
The Boston argument.
And it doesn't. It doesn't.
Are you familiar with the Boston song More Than a Feeling?
Yes.
Oh, God.
It doesn't sound exactly like it, but like Kurt Cobain himself is like, oh, I pulled from that.
For which song?
For Smells Like Teen Spirit. Which, like, they're not identical, but.
It depends on how you look at it, and I don't agree. And months later, we both
think we're right.
Yeah, and then we'll just be arguing.
Like, this could start right now.
And then I'll say, like, all right, let's just not talk because I don't want to.
We have the lung throwdown going on right now.
Yeah, pizza versus kale. Who wins?
Well, let's change.
Kale on pizza is the actual solution.
As long as it's not pineapple. I'm not big on that. But anyway.
I mean, to each their own, but yeah, I think it's weird.
Can we talk about the videos? Because you have, right now, I think two videos for this album. One is Butcher and one is Spiders. And Butcher features so many people from this area and in different bands, and it's just a wonderful, I don't know, maybe like a celebration of local music. I wonder if you tell me about that.
Well, so with that video, it was really fun just like coming up with the idea and like the storyboard for that, and like working with Rochelle Kaplan on how, and like making the sets all pretty and everything. But like, when you're thinking about who to have in it, I had like this cast of weirdos in my mind. I was like, who do I know who's weird? And like, oh wait, all my friends who are in the music scene, who are awesome and like talented. And so it was cool. We just like thought about some of our favorite bands that we like to hang with that we thought would be really fun and would be into it, and like just asked people. And then when folks said yes, like we kind of cast them in different sort of characters. It was fun. It's like a fun way to include people that we love and like give props to like where we're from.
Well, and there's definitely this creepy, almost Tim Burton-y aspect to the videos.
I kind of, with Butcher, I just wanted to like have it be a representation of how I felt when I wrote that song, and it's kind of about just the crazier parts and the weirder parts in your brain. And I don't know, I just sat down and storyboarded it, and that's how it came out. And Rochelle and I both thought that it'd be so fun to have like creepy black gloves. Just, I don't know, there's something fun about creepy black gloves. And we also, I totally ripped this off of both Shell Shag A Vision and Hedwig and the Angry Inch. There's a television scene with like a cardboard television, and like Hedwig and the Angry Inch is one of my favorite movies, and in one of their songs they have like this great scene that is similar. And so it was just kind of drawing off of like things that I love and that Rochelle loves.
Another thing I want to ask you about this album, All the King's Horses, in my mind might be just the pinnacle of the album is the cover song. This beautiful, wonderfully twisted cover that you do of David Bowie and Brian Eno's song, I'm Afraid of Americans. Why did you choose that song? And then why did you make the changes that you made to it?
We originally chose it because we were asked to play a show at the end of 2016 in Lexington, Kentucky, where they were like, well, you can play, but can you play a cover of someone who passed away this year? And we were like, seems like a weird request, but okay, yeah, sure, whatever. And we started with something like...
We started with working on Prince, and...
You can't cover
Prince. Like, you just can't.
That's... Yeah, I don't know. We tried a couple different songs, and it was like... It just sounded like it sounded like a joke. Like, it just did not... It didn't sound like us, and it sounded like we weren't doing a good service to the song, nor a good service to Prince's memory, nor anything. And then I think you suggested I'm Afraid of Americans.
Yeah, that's...
And then we just kind of started... Because I feel like... Some of the elements of that song we were already working on as
a
separate, just as one of our songs. And then we sort of like adapted those riffs, if I remember correctly, into the cover. And it worked. So we just kind of kept doing it.
It was one of my favorite songs growing up. And so it was cool to do live. And then once we did it once, then it felt like an important song, especially since like that was right after the election that we played it. And I changed some of the lyrics partially because some of them I heard wrong when I was a kid. Like the first ones are like, Johnny's an American, he drinks at the wheel. I don't think those are actually the words, but that's what my like kid brain thought they were saying. And then it's just too easy to throw Donald in there. It's just too easy. So, yeah.
It's just interesting because you said when you finished this album, you had so many other tracks that you didn't include. And then for you to include a cover song is kind of a big choice.
With covers, it's there's the area of doing it justice, and there's the area where you just make it your own thing. And I felt, not to pat ourselves on the back or pull out a muscle doing so, but like I felt like we did a pretty good job making it our own song, so it kind of fit, like both thematically and like vibe-wise and everything.
What's funny is that after I heard your version, I went and watched the video for Bowie and Eno's original, where he's running through the city, where he's having visions of people coming after him, and it still fits with your version. And it like cool. just the whole mentality of it.
We should
overlay your song to the video, it'd totally still work. Absolutely.
That's cool.
Also,
really
we should
cool.
use a click track.
Yeah.
Also included in the production of this album was your joining with Sofa Burn Records.
Yes. We really love all of them as people, like everyone whose label it is, like they're all really cool people and they're all musicians. We all, I think, come from similar mindsets and like similar ethos, and we all like to work really hard. So like when we chatted with them, like it just seemed like it would work out really well, and it has been. Like they're just really great to work with.
Yeah, like we met Mike playing a show with his band. Like it's like you just
our
sort
band,
of
so freaking good.
I don't know. There's a way people approach labels and stuff like that. Like, it's supposed to change a bunch of things or do a bunch of things different. Really, it should just be, like, more people working hard. Everyone should continue to work hard, but they should just work harder and smarter. And, like, they definitely have that down and are helping a lot and are good people and everything.
So you have your album release party coming September 8th at Urban Artifact, but you're doing things a little bit differently. You're including your album release with the release of a book called Rocktails. And that's a book of cocktail recipes put out by two women who are also local musicians.
Yes.
That is true.
Yeah. They're good friends of ours, and we love their music.
So we have Kristen Kreff from Perfect Children.
And Maya.
And Maya from Heavy Hinges.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've played lots of shows together in different projects and everything. And we just, like, thought it'd be fun because it's a book of cocktails inspired by rock music. That's kind of fun. And just like more so though than that, I think it's just an opportunity to have a really fun party with friends. Like just a really fun celebration of like lots of releases, and Carriers is playing and we love them, and
Proud Parents are homies from Wisconsin.
So just like just making a fun night.
I really appreciate you guys coming by and spending some time with me and talking to me today. Want to play one more song?
Absolutely.
While you guys leave?
Sounds good.
What do you want to play?
We're going to play a new song, and it's called Wall, that is not on our record, that is upcoming.
It's on our next record.
Yeah.
Called To Be Determined.
TBD.
Part two. Part three.
Lung volume four.
Oh, gosh. Your thing about having an album cover of, like, we're standing in a field.
This is what our next album's going to be called. Are you ready for this?
No,
all right,
sure.
All right. This is it. This is the album. All right. So it's the two of us, right? We're standing in a field, and it says lung on top, and then at the bottom it says outstanding in their field.
But like outstanding in their field, not outstanding.
Because puns.
This is like the whole album title, though. It's like, it has to be like explained like that. Like outstanding in their field. Outstanding, not outstanding.
Yeah. So people know.
Yeah.
Just beat it to death.
That's right.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It's only good if it's beaten to death.
Well, again, Kate and Daisy, I'm really glad that you took the time to come visit with me today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Awesome. All right.
My heartfelt thanks to Kate Wakefield and Daisy Kaplan from Lung for being part of the show. The release party for their new album, All the King's Horses, is Saturday, September 8th at Urban Artifact. For links to more information about the release party, the band, and other upcoming shows, please visit wvxu.org/lx. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. The live musical parts of today's episode were recorded and produced by Josh Elstro, and the talking bits were edited and produced by me, Jim Nolan. The theme music for this episode is by Scott Holmes and comes from the Free Music Archive. You can find out more at freemusicarchive.com. As always, you can find more great local music stories when you subscribe to Local Exposure at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Until next time.